Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, September 10th. I'm Ray Graff. Big election coming up in November. Like I got to tell you, it's less than 8 weeks away, and the battle over mail-in votes and absentee votes continues right now in courtrooms around the country. Joining us this afternoon is attorney at law James Long. He is here to discuss election law. Really, any law questions you have, but we're talking about election law today. If you have a question about how elections work, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also reach out via email, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Election law, James Long, your calls, coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us today is attorney at law James Long. James Long has been in private practice since 1979. Most recently, he served as special counsel to the New York State Democratic Conference. Long's specialty is election law, and that's been much in the news lately. He has been practicing for over 40 years. Mr. Long has represented candidates from the Democratic Party, Albany County Conservative Party, New York State Independence Party, Working Families Party, many others. He's also a former public defender serving in Albany County from 1995 to 2003. Mr. Long has tried over 100 felony cases in state and federal court. He is on the line with us today to answer your questions. If you have a question about how elections work or some other law-related inquiry, give us a call. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, and you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. James Long, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Really appreciate you joining us on short notice here. Our producer was scrambling, and you really came through. And when she called, she said, the secretary said, Commissioner Long's office. So you got to tell us what commissioner you are.
I am a commissioner in the office of the New York State Legislative Bill Drafting Commission.
Very interesting, and that's interesting work at all. We saw in the news earlier this month, a federal judge says minor political parties in New York have failed to make their case that the state violated their constitutional rights by making it harder to qualify as parties and get on the ballot in upcoming elections. You have represented some of these parties in the past. Tell us about... We know what their reactions are, but tell us about how they would go to the next step and fight that.
Well, there would certainly be an appeal if they decided that the federal judge down in the Southern District in New York City was wrong. There's always an appeal to the Second Circuit. I don't know if the parties plan on doing that. As far as from a practical, political, and election law solution, they basically, this year, have to hope they do well with their choice of candidates, because they need that 3% now, or 130,000 votes on their ballot line. Traditionally, it's only been the limit or the baseline that was always set during a gubernatorial election, but the legislature changed the law, and it's now every 2 years in a gubernatorial election and a presidential election.
So the party's status will be reviewed every other year starting this November, right?
Starting, right, exactly.
Fair or not fair, in your opinion?
I think it's fair. I mean, the 50,000 threshold comes from the 1930s when there was about 5 million less people in New York. I mean, everything's going up these days, right? So even the number of votes needed to qualify for a... Now, that just allows them to qualify for a ballot line for the next 2 years. They still can run candidates. They just then have to circulate petitions. It really will have little or no effect on the local races because they still had to circulate petitions and get a minimum number of signatures to qualify for the ballot line. It's primarily going to affect the gubernatorial, statewide, United States Senate. It may affect some statewide judgeships, but they're not out of business. They just have to work a little harder.
I assume, sir, that you have been watching some of the goings-on in the courts leading up to this national election, and we'll get to that in a moment. We're joined today by James Long. Commissioner Long is with us today to answer your questions about election law, and the number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You know, you have represented a pretty wide range of candidates, Democrats, conservatives, the Independence Party, Working Families Party. First, before we get into the details, how do you professionally leave your political views out of it when you assist a client?
Well, I kind of learned from my other life as a criminal defense attorney is that everybody's entitled to a good lawyer who should work hard. And there also just aren't enough election lawyers. There's probably in the state of New York maybe 25, 50 at the tops lawyers who I would consider good election lawyers. And every year, every candidate at some point decides they want to talk to an election lawyer. They never seem to budget in their campaign finance provisions for the lawyers, especially the Democrats.
Are you working pro bono a lot? Is that what you're saying?
For about 35 of those 40 years.
Oh, man. Now, what are the most common questions that political candidates have for you?
Well, it's twofold. In the beginning, it's how do I get on the ballot?
Yeah.
How many signatures do I need? Where do I get the signatures from? Now, this time of year, it's are you available to help me make sure all the ballots are counted? Or sometimes there's somebody who will call me and say, are you available to help me make sure that all the ballots don't get counted? Because if they all do, I'll lose. So they're usually looking for how to get on the ballot, ballot access. And then after that, it's usually how do we get the votes counted and properly tallied?
You know, we talk about getting on the ballot. Lately, mail-in ballots have been a real big deal. Today, this crossed the wire. Attorneys for President Trump's re-election campaign are urging a federal judge in Las Vegas to block a state law and prevent mail-in ballots from going to all active Nevada voters less than 8 weeks before the November 3rd elections and amid the pandemic. Have you been, I assume you have, been watching what is going on with mail-in and absentee ballots? We saw in New York that Governor Cuomo now will allow voters to request absentee ballots for the general election because of the coronavirus. So have you been watching this? And before we take our first break and then get to the phones, maybe you could distill your thoughts on everything that has been happening.
Sure. I wonder how the lawyers who filed out in Nevada could do so with a straight face. There is better safety valves and fail-safe provisions, at least in New York, where I practice primarily. But I've had rare occasion to go to other states to work on an election law matters to prevent the fraud that people in Washington are talking about or now they're talking about in Nevada. There's barcodes, there's signature checks. A lot of it's all done with technology. The big gripe lately has been that people are getting absentee ballots who didn't even ask for them. Well, that's because of the time element we're dealing with. If you were to apply for an absentee ballot now and by the time it got approved and mailed back to you, it's starting to get awful close to the election and you got to remember to get it back. So it's just not the way it's being portrayed. I was involved in a major election law fraud case about 10 years ago, and it amounted to 43 votes. It's not going to sway the presidential election, that's for sure.
Let's take a quick break here, Commissioner Long. We are joined by James Long, and we will get to your election law questions at 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpopwamc.org. A quick break and we'll be right back. Vox Pop today, election law, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, if you have a question for James Long today. And this was crossing the wire yesterday, an Iowa judge who nullified 50,000 absentee ballots requests in Iowa's second largest county seems ready to void thousands more in a neighboring county at the urging of President Trump's re-election campaign. Judge Ian Thornhill heard arguments Wednesday in Johnson County, the state's most Democratic-leaning, in a similar request for an injunction sought by the Trump campaign and Republican Party groups. He said he would issue a ruling soon, but raised several points that he did in his Linn County ruling that gave Trump a sweeping legal victory. My question for you, and you know, there are the arcane details here that most of us will not understand, but is there enough time now to litigate these with November 3rd looming?
Yes, there is. If the judges work expeditiously, the lawyers know, you know, the average election law case comes into my office on a Monday, and I'm drafted the papers, and I'm in court on Wednesday and arguing by Thursday and through the appellate process a week or two later. So, yes, there is time. As I understand that case out in Iowa, as New York has to, although New York has dealt with them, there are a lot of archaic laws on the books in cases where you cannot send out absentees earlier than a certain date. And apparently out there they mailed those 50,000 out a week or two before time, which you would think, well, that's a good idea to give more time for people to vote. But it's black and white in the law. It's not to be mailed before a certain date. Years ago, I had a case down in the Hudson Valley where the poll inspectors, the law provided that they could get their a ballot a week before and vote it, because they were going to be working on Election Day and usually not in their own polling place. Well, they were all given it about 2 days early because it was the day they were having the training, and most of them voted that day. Mm. And initially, the lower court ruled that they got the ballots 2 days too early and the ballots should not be counted. The appellate division in that case said that's a little too disenfranchisement for the good of the people, and the reverse that, those ballots were counted, and it made the difference in that race.
In your, and this is only your opinion, Jim, should the rules for absentee ballots and mail-in ballots be the same across the land?
My opinion would be yes, we do. Right now, you know, I heard someone say the other night on some talk show that we really have, start out, you have 50 different elections with the 50 states, and then within each state. In New York, we have 59 different elections between all the counties and then the four boroughs of New York, which are all governed by the New York City Board of Elections. And it's different. Every time I go into a case outside of my immediate neighborhood here in Albany, there's always something different with the Board of Elections and how they do it. We need more uniformity, so we're all on an even playing field.
We're joined,
but again,
today,
that is only my opinion.
Right. We're joined today by attorney at law Jim Long, and really great that you showed up on such short notice. I hope you don't hit us with a billable hour for this.
It's not too bad. You'll see when you get the bill.
The number here is 800-348-2551 if you have a question. Let's go to Luke in Western Massachusetts. Luke.
Hey, so first I want to just say, you know, I agree totally that mail-in voting is a great thing and totally safe. I'm just curious, what kind of legal or criminal exposure could voters be looking at if they actually listen to President Trump and try to vote twice knowingly?
You know, there's one big case in New York years ago, but the difference in that case where a guy was prosecuted, he was a lawyer and he was disbarred. I think he subsequently may have gotten a pardon along the way. But the difference there was, though, he voted from his mother's house, and then he went across town and voted from his own house. That was the crime. If in New York right now, if I voted absentee and then showed up on Election Day at the polling place, they're going to allow me to vote. It's legal. What the technology and the apparatus of the Board of Elections does is they will cross-check everybody who went to the polls on November 3rd and see if there is an absentee ballot envelope in a pile. If it is, they go find it, take it out, and put it in a special place where it's never to be opened. Because what happened historically is I might thought, well, I'm going to be out of town on November 3rd, and so I apply for an absentee and I voted, and then my business trip gets canceled. So I'm in town. I decide, well, you know what? I don't want somebody challenging my absentee ballot saying you weren't out of town. I saw you at the coffee shop. So I go and I vote on the machine, which is always safer, and my absentee ballot would be discarded. So if President Trump was talking strictly to New Yorkers, he was not telling them to break the law.
But very interesting.
In other states, I understand, in North Carolina specifically, once you've dropped that absentee ballot in the mail, as far as they're concerned, you voted, and you best not.
There was a case in Texas of a woman that was voted absentee, then was told that she was allowed to vote, and when she went and voted, and then they tried her for a felony.
Hmm. Yeah. Yep. And I think they gave her a ridiculous sentence of like 6 years.
Georgia's top elections official said the other day, a couple of days ago, that his office has identified about 1,000 cases of potential double voting in the June primaries, and that's a felony there. These voters submitted absentee ballots but also voted in person, so that's 1,000 votes. That potentially has the ability, depending on the race, to sway a race.
Certainly, 1,000 votes could sway a race, whether it be congressional or local. But my understanding of what the gentleman in Georgia said, he then offered no proof whatsoever to back it up.
All right, we'll see how that one plays out. We're joined today by Jim Long, attorney at law, and we talk election law on Vox Pop. The number is 800-348-2551. Joanna is in Clifton Park. Joanna.
Yes.
Hello, you're on.
Hello. Okay, I have a question. I will be working at the polls as an election inspector. I've probably been doing it 9-10 years. And mm-hmm. So when I was hearing on the news that Trump might send in law enforcement to the polling places as an inspector, what rights do I have to make sure they leave?
Well, that's a good question. First off, I've been in a lot of polling places for these last 40 years, and you guys do great work, and it's really not appreciated by many people. So thank you for your service in this regard. You would call if somebody comes in, and I doubt you'll see it very much anywhere in New York, but I saw it about 25 years ago when there was an influx of Latinos in the Albany area, and it seemed like the wards that they lived in had people coming in and challenging voters. And law enforcement showed up and basically cleared out the agitators who were wrongly challenging people. So you shouldn't see it here in New York. But if you did, you should call the Board of Elections, the commissioner of whichever one party you belong, and they'll come up to see what in God's earth does law enforcement feel they need to be in your polling place for on November 3rd. And I'm sure they'll convince them to leave. Law enforcement's not going to come in. It's a crime if you interfere with somebody voting. It's a crime if
right.
you falsely accuse somebody of not being entitled to vote, and then they sign an affidavit that they are entitled. And if you push it too hard, that law enforcement person that they're talking about sending in is going to find themselves on the other side of the law.
At the bad side.
Yeah. Well, Joanna, thanks for the call.
I should hang my shingle about the civil rights that would be violated. If I tried to prevent somebody who should vote from voting, I hope I have a big bank account or a great insurance policy, because somebody's going to sue me for interfering with their constitutional rights.
Joanna, thank you very much for the call. We're joined today by attorney at law Jim Long. We talk election law today, 800-348-2551. What exactly is the enumerated role of the election inspector?
The inspectors are there to try to keep certain order in the old days when there were brawls that would break out. But now today it's to check in the voter, make sure they're in the right ward, district, voting district, ED as we call it, election district, so that, you know, if you come in and you live in here in Albany, if you live in Pine Hills, but somehow you just go out to Gilderland to vote, you're going to not be found in the books, and hopefully they have a way to find out where you should be and send you to the right place. There is a step-by-step. They're supposed to announce, which I've never seen done, announce the voter. Jim Long is here, and everybody, and then the watchers can strike me off their list because they now know I came and I voted. And then they can't give the right ballot from the, in primaries. You got to be careful. They tend to give you the wrong party ballot. But it's human nature. People make mistakes. But they're there to check in, make sure you get a ballot, and if you need any help to vote it, whether it be because of a disability or you just can't, you hadn't voted before, you're allowed to ask them to assist you rather than the candidates that's lurking outside.
We are joined today by Jim Long. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And before we get to our next caller, you know, there has been so much focus on this election. And with the last election, you could say that was has been somewhat delegitimized by those who say, hey, this president did not win the popular vote. Now we have the president saying, well, if I lose, it may be a little sketchy and there may be some suspicion there. There has been talk, and there was in elections past as well, about bringing more international elections inspectors on board across the country. Are you on board with that idea?
I don't think international inspectors would be necessary. All of the shenanigans rarely happens on November 3rd at the polling place and with the machine. It happens usually back at the Board of Elections, where election lawyers start flocking in and making ridiculous objections. You know, people's signature change over the years. Your signature on an absentee ballot has to be on the outside of your ballot envelope. Well, I used to have a kind of a good Roman Catholic nun cursive signature.
Yeah, me too.
That's changed since I registered to vote back in 1972,
yeah.
I think it was. So, you know, my vote would get challenged because the signature doesn't match my original registration. It's usually lawyers who make all the problems in election.
And
it's
money.
Rarely the voters.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Jim Long is here to answer your election law questions. And Evelyn is in Rhinebeck. You're on.
Hi. I'm thrilled to hear that you think that we should have more national uniformity. I guess I was naive because I'm kind of appalled that we don't. What would it take? An act of Congress? Is there a good argument against it?
It would take an act of Congress, yep, both houses, and it would take the signature of the president, which is always doubtful, because right now the argument against it is that it's a states' right rule, that the state should be able to decide how they operate their elections. If you think back before, I think it was 1924, the United States senators were selected by the state legislators. And then people got tired of that process, and we went to a straight and open election statewide. So it would take an act of Congress, and the only logical reason would be that you're taking away local autonomy on how to operate their local elections.
Well, it would be possible, however, though, to keep local elections, within the state confines, but national elections to, you know, dance to the beat of a different drum. Is that not possible?
That is possible. It's an excellent idea. Just make it all federal elections, operate under these rules, and the rest remain controlled by state and local.
Okay,
so I guess I have to start writing Congress again.
Again, yep.
Well, maybe you can
I'll
just
bet
email.
I'll bet you your congressman would be interested in this.
Evelyn, thanks a lot for the
Indeed.
Call.
Indeed.
Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
800-348-2551 if you have an election law question for Attorney at Law James Long. Without giving away any information that would violate the canon of ethics, what is the most interesting case that you have dealt with, either statewide or locally, from an election standpoint?
Probably the most, the one that drew the most notoriety was the Workers' Family Party primary in the city of Troy back in, I think it was 2009, where there were people who didn't exercise the right to vote. And so certain other people thought, well, you know, they're not using that vote. Why don't I borrow it? So that was interesting, and it dragged on for years and years and years. My favorite one, though, was once I was sent to Coney Island on an election day, and it's a big Russian community. And so not understanding the language, everybody was talking to each other in Russian.
Yeah.
And what these gentlemen would do is you would walk in with your candidate's name in English on a card and ask the inspector to show you where they were on the ballot because you were looking for the Russian alphabet. And what they did is they would vote for their candidate. But as they were clicking the vote, this is the old lever machines, they were clicking the vote, they were immediately opening the curtains and then saying, I can't, where it is again, I can't find it. And they were reset the machine, so they were voting twice.
And that's it, that would strictly be illegal. If you make a mistake in there and those curtains open, you're done, right?
You're done, exactly. Same as now, if when you slide your ballot through the machine and it's scanned, it's done, it's counted.
You know, I voted for years, and I must confess, I'm an old school person, I'm a Neanderthal by many stretches. But I loved the old machines. I am not a fan of the new electronic machines. You had mentioned earlier in the show that, you know, voting in person much more safe from a having your vote counted standpoint than voting absentee. What do you prefer, the new electronic way or the old mechanical way?
You know, I'm old. I'm even older than you, right? So I was used to the mechanical lever, and I voted for an awful lot of years that way. I was around when they were changing the machines after the, you know, the debacle in the 2000 presidential race, and all of a sudden all this money was coming out under what's called the Help America Vote Act.
Right.
And we had needed new technology. You know, how is it we can go and get $20 out of a machine at the bank window, but we can't got to pull this old-fashioned lever? You know, and the levers were, you know, the thing was the lever marked a piece of paper at the back of the machine, and then everybody had to agree what that paper on the back of the machine recorded. And so there were some shenanigans, I suppose, in those days as well. But what I like about the election now, though, is there is a paper trail. So if we can't agree upon what the number is, we can pull out all 60,000. I was involved in an election recount in Ulster County a couple of years ago where we counted, I think it was about 38,000 ballots by hand. So having that paper trail is a safeguard.
Well, let's assume for a moment, and I don't think it's a big stretch, that regardless of the outcome of this the national election in November, there will be some questioning of the results. How long will it take to count that many paper ballots, assuming it has to be done? We might not get a result for a long time.
I agree. I have not booked any trips for Thanksgiving. So I would think by the end of November, if it's in a close race. I personally have the opinion that it's not going to be as close as some people think, but that's, again, only my opinion.
Well, there have been many people who have been wrong in certainly in the media and in the political observer circle in the last election. So we shall see. Let's take a quick break here. We're joined by Attorney at Law Jim Long. We're talking election law. We'll get back to the phones in a moment. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Number's 800-348-2551. Interesting to talk to somebody who really knows about election law, given all the things we have heard and all the things we will hear in these 7.5 weeks or so. Back to the phones we go. And if you have a question for Jim Long, feel free to call 800-348-2551. Bernard in High Falls, you're on.
Hi. I was wondering, why would the voter trust the tabulation of their vote onto a piece of paper? It seems to me that that's hackable. Why would the voters trust that?
The piece of paper.
In other words, you go in, you push a button, but some piece of paper at the other end shows something. But why would you trust that that button that you pushed tabulated what you just said?
Okay,
Bernard, he gets it.
You don't. The machine doesn't mark your ballot. You mark it. You filled it out, marked it. Now, why trust the machine reading it and counting it correctly? That's a question that's probably past my
So, in other words, when you push the button, you actually see the results first, so that you know for sure that when you push the button for so-and-so, so-and-so got your vote.
Well, the way we do it in my town, and I'm not sure what happens in your town, but we fill out a piece of paper, and then you put it into a reader. So you're actually you're filling the circle in, at least where I vote.
I see. That assures me quite a bit. Thank you.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Jim Long is our guest. Suzanne in Poughkeepsie. Hello, Suzanne.
About the Electoral College, and can you explain it a little bit, and how can we make it fair so that the Electoral College persons vote the way the state has decided the election? And I will hang up and listen on the radio.
Thanks a lot. We appreciate it. All right. Well, good luck. We only have 15. That'll take a lot. Go ahead.
The question all day. I've been worried about that question.
Yeah, that's a big
question. It's hard to explain. I've read the Federalist Papers when I was in law school, and that was 42 years ago. And I never wanted to go back and read it until the Hamilton, the Broadway play came out, but I haven't gotten around to it. But the basic concept is, here's the why people don't want to change the Electoral College. If we changed it, California and New York could probably elect, if they had overwhelming majorities, elect the president, and the other 48 states wouldn't have any say. That's the theory behind it.
Right.
We've obviously seen that it hasn't always worked out that way, because when you turn around and you win an election by 3 million votes, popular votes, but then you actually lose the election because 17,000 people in Pennsylvania voted a different way, it's hard to justify. To answer your question is it'll take another act of Congress, and actually a constitutional amendment to do away. And when you look how long it took to pass a constitutional amendment to let that young lady vote. So I'm not optimistic that the Electoral College is on its way out.
We will certainly see. And if in fact we have a third election in 20 years where the popular vote is not the same as the Electoral College vote, I'm sure that the cries will become louder. We're joined today by attorney at law James Long, and the number is 800-348-2551. Election law today on Vox Pop. David is in Lee. Hello, David.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'll ask the question and then hang up. And my question is, what does happen on January 21st if the president decides not to leave office? and thank you for taking my question.
All right, Jim, what do you think about that?
That's a question actually I have been thinking about for a while. As I understand it, assuming everyone in the rest of the government remains loyal to their oath to support and defend the Constitution, they will no longer take their orders or directions from that person who won't vacate, that the U.S. Marshals will show up and move people who don't belong in the White House and in the West Wing out, because they'll be directed to do so by their superiors. I think we're going to be okay there, although I would check every closet if I were the new occupant when I moved in.
You know, I've heard political observers make this worry known and this worried public for a couple of years now. I mean, in my view, one of the great things about America, one of the things that has made America great is the peaceful transference of power. I can't believe that that would ever happen. And maybe I'm just being optimistic.
No, I agree. You know, what I worry more about is come after January 20th and February or March, and who knows what's happening in the world, and then people start to think that, you know, we made a mistake again, and then stop being good Americans, living up to the democracy that we created 240 some years ago. But the key is, you know, every time I've been on a trial and somebody's got on the witness stand and put their hand on the Bible and swore to tell the truth, I was comfortable that they were going to tell the truth. Some didn't, I'm sure, but I was comfortable that the vast majority, and I'm comfortable that the vast majority of the people who take the oath of office that they'll be taking, whether it be, you know, Congress or any other oath of office, that they'll, you know, follow the new commander-in-chief and do what the new commander-in-chief tells them to do, including evicting someone who's squatting in the White House.
We're joined today by attorney at law Jim Long, and we talk election law on this Vox Pop. About 10 minutes left here. 800-348-2551. Ed is in Tilson. Ed.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hey.
Hey, for several years since I used to work out of state, I would always go straight to the Board of Elections in my county, fill out an absentee ballot request, get an absentee ballot, and fill out the ballot right there and hand it right in. And since I don't really want to go to a polling place this year, even though I'm going to be home, I wanted to do the same thing. And I just want to know, when are those ballots actually going to be ready so we could go to the Board of Elections and do it just like that?
Right. I think the target date is the ballots are supposed to be ready by, I want to say, September 24th or 28th. It might be a little bit later because there's still some fighting going on about some ballot issues, but it's about it's not, you know, as long as it should be. You can now, in New York, for example, you can now call your Board of Elections as long as you can give them, like you do with your credit card, you know, the last 4 years social, some identifying, they'll send it to you right away. Just yesterday, the governor signed a new executive order that every Board of Elections is to provide some kind of a drop box. It might be inside, but it should be someplace where people will not have to wait in line, is what the governor's order said. And I think that's great. People will be able to, you can get the ballot mailed to you, you can fill it out, and you can drop it off in a drop box on the outside and not have to, you know, expose yourself to the virus. There's more and more ways that it's going to be available to you. But the key is, as you may hear on public service announcements, plan ahead. If you wanted to do that, you know, if you're like me, I used to go in on November 2nd because somebody called me and asked me to come out to Erie County to help on an election, and I voted in Albany. So I went in on the 2nd and did exactly what you did many a time. I can't wait that long, although you can still do that, but that makes you go into the Board of Elections. If you want to avoid any contact, reach out to your Board of Elections now. They'll put you on a list and they'll expedite getting you your ballot and get it back quickly.
Well, Ed,
you will also be able to take it in to the Board of Elections or to a drop box or to one of the early voting sites. You can bring it physically there, hand it off. They're going to have boxes there, so you don't have to even deal with anybody. You can drop it in yourself.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Ed. Our number here is 800-348-2551. We're joined by attorney Jim Long, and Eric is in Albany. Eric, you're on.
Hi. Hello. Hi, Jim. You mentioned that you've had to do manual recounts where there's tens of thousands of votes counted. I'm just curious about that procedure. How do you keep track of numbers as you're doing the manual recounts and make sure that the manual recount's accurate?
Yeah, who oversees that? Great. Thank you, Eric.
It's actually literally what people who are officially called poll watchers. Most of us are attorneys designated for that role. We literally sit there. I've got so many slash 1, 2, 3, 4, and then cross for 5. The election commissioners will open the envelopes or pull out the ballots. We'll then we all glance at it quickly to see if there's any extrinsic writing on it. You know, if somebody writes a note on the ballot, they voided their ballot. So never write anything. Just vote.
What about a write-in?
Vote clear. You can. The write-in doesn't void it. Although you cannot write in a candidate in New York, you cannot write in a candidate whose name's already on the ballot. You'd be surprised how often we see, you know, that James Long running for city court judge. There's my name, black and white, and then on the bottom somebody writes in James Long.
Huh.
It's an overvote.
Eric, that's a great call. Thank you. Now, you know, in a trial, a criminal trial, the prosecution and defense, they fight it out over who's on the jury. I assume then that the watchers, the poll watchers, and the commissioners who are opening these paper ballots, they're evenly split as far as the representation of parties?
Yeah, the two major parties.
Mm.
There was one year once when the gubernatorial race was so close that the Conservative Party almost became the second party in New York, bumping down another party. But it didn't quite happen. But if that happened, then you'd have a Democrat and a Conservative, or you could have a Republican and a worker's family. But right now, in every Board of Elections, there's a commissioner and a deputy commissioner of each of the major parties, and they're the referees. And when they can't agree, it gets laid aside. Talk about a speedy clock. It gets laid aside for just 3 days. And if nobody goes to court, it then gets opened. And if somebody's got 3 days to go to court to convince the judge not to open that ballot.
Ah, well, you know, come November 4th, you may well be very busy. David in Newburgh. David, you're on.
Thank you. I wondered why the Supreme Court has not ruled that gerrymandering violates the one-man, one-vote rule. And that's the way, basically, you know, the last two Republican presidents have been elected.
I agree with the last part, but I'm not sure I can agree with the first part, because the whole key, computers have really been the worst thing for gerrymandering, because you can now enter everybody into the computer, their political persuasion, and then you can manipulate the neighborhoods that you're going to put together in the district so that you can stay with one man, one vote. Although it isn't exactly, you know, that's a great saying, isn't it, one man, one vote? Except the courts have ruled over the years that there can be a deviation. There can be one congressional district where there may be 765,000 voters, and right next door, the other congressional district has 761,000. So one congressional district has 3,000 more voters than the other. But it's within a margin of error. I forget what the number was. I want to say it was less than 12%, which I always thought was high. Then it's considered that congressman has the same weight as the other one, or congressperson, and they're able to, you know, represent you, even though one neighborhood or one congressional district, and it's the same with your local district, has a few more people than the other. You know, we live in a republic where we elect people to represent us, and it's not perfect, that's for sure. But one man, one vote isn't the cure to the reapportionment issues. The truth is we have to stand for our principles. Apportionment, you're supposed to keep neighborhoods intact. You're not supposed to divide minorities. You know, the classic case years ago down in Houston was that the city of Houston had a large minority majority. So instead of cutting the districts in pie shapes so that those large majority minority districts stayed together and represented each other, they did it with circles. And so in the center of the circle, you had the large minority majority, but the outer circle that they broke the district in, you didn't. And so one party went from having, you know, 20 out of 28 districts, and after they did the circle instead of the pie shape, they went to having like four.
Hmm.
So it's the manipulation of statistics. that works against proper reapportionment.
Let's grab at least one more here. We only have about 90 seconds, but let's go to Bruce in Kingston. Bruce, you have about a minute to pose your question, and Jim will have about 30 seconds to answer, or vice versa.
Okay, about Florida, where maybe about 7,000 ex-felons were purged and until they pay their fees, kind of a poll tax. Suppose you got a whole bunch of guys, Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, LeBron James, Bloomberg, Soros, paying their fees. Would they be allowed to vote?
If I don't know exactly what. I mean, you're 1,000% right. It's a poll tax, and that's what they're doing down there. But I don't know if they had any deadlines to pay the fines by, whether if they paid it now, whether they could vote this November. I don't know those details. But otherwise, there's nothing to stop anybody from going down and paying somebody's court costs or fines so they get the right to vote back. Yep, Bloomberg and Buffett and Soros and all the rest can go do that.
All right, Bruce, thanks a lot for the call. Jim Long, what is your biggest concern in 20 seconds? What is your biggest concern going into November 3rd?
Right, going into it is the misinformation, convincing people that somehow their votes won't count or that they won't be back in time, scaring people into thinking that voting is not going to be what it has always been. That's what worries me the most.
Well, sir, I can't thank you enough for being here. I hope you come back maybe after all the lawsuits are done in November, mm-hmm. December, January. Come on back. We'll talk again, okay?
We'll talk about the retainer then, right?
Beautiful. All right, and we'll have somebody pay you. I won't do that, but we have somebody here who'll do that. Support comes
that
from personal wine cellar, Glenville, offering a selection of red and white wines and spirits, wine tasting every Thursday and Friday, monthly scotch at bourbon tasting, home delivery available, 518-399-9463. At the Hyde Collection, featuring two new exhibits, J.S. Woolley, photographer, and Images of the People, Russian lacquer painting, by appointment only, hydecollection.org. Once again, thanks to attorney Jim Long for being on the line with us today. Thank you for listening. Great questions, and apologies if we didn't get to yours. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, Jackie Orchard, our producer, Joe Makowicz answered the phones. Tomorrow on Food Friday, it's Baking with Deanna Fox. Right now, stand by for the Capital Connection.